There's a familiar saying that you're only as old as you feel. Well, as a 61-year-old, I can tell you there are days I feel 31 and days I feel 81. The fact is, lots of us are coping with getting older. What do we know about maintaining our quality of life in our older years? And how does an aging population impact on families and taxpayers? We get into all of that today with a couple of aging experts on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Some 15% of Americans are 65 or older, and in the next 12 years, that's going to jump to 21%. That, of course, has implications for the elderly, their families, and society. To help us walk through the challenges and solutions to aging issues, our guests today are Beverly Laubert. She was appointed Interim Director of the Ohio Department of Aging last December. Director Laubert has been an ombudsman for nearly 30 years, including 23 of them as the state long-term care ombudsman here in Ohio. Dr. Jim Bates is an assistant professor and extension field specialist of family wellness in the Family and Consumer Sciences program at Ohio State University in the extension department of the College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences. He also holds an appointment in OSU's College of Education and Human Ecology. And my apologies, Bev and Jim, I called you aging experts. I should have said experts on aging, so not to get us off on the wrong foot. Beverly, we're gonna start with you. In my lead there, I said we want to age well. We want this to be a pleasant part of our lives. What does that look like? What does it mean to grow old gracefully and age well?
Well, and we are all aging, so the way you described us is perfectly fine. So as older Ohioans continue to age, we really want them to be engaged in the community. There are many opportunities for people to prevent illness, prevent chronic disease. And so we really want younger generations who are aging to focus on those prevention sorts of activities that they can do. You had an interesting statistic when you opened up in Ohio. By 2020, 76 of Ohio's 88 counties will have at least 22% of their population over the age of 60. And by 2030, 81 counties will have at least 25% of their population over 60. So Ohio is aging very quickly.
Jim, your thoughts on aging well?
That's a great point Beverly just made. And one of the kind of the frameworks for wellness that I like to refer to has these eight components. And really, it comes down to making choices about one's health and wellness and acting purposefully to live healthy, to live for the future. And some of those aspects of wellness are, you know, emotional wellness, spiritual wellness. There's familial, relational, or social wellness, physical wellness, occupational wellness, intellectual wellness, financial and environmental wellness. So all of those things kind of make up, you know, what it means to be to age well and to focus on that idea of wellness.
We'll drill down into a few of those. I guess one of the challenges is you both did a good job of describing what it looks like when it goes right, but it doesn't always go right. I guess I would say that one of the biggest challenges is understanding that, Jim, there are some things you can control and some things you can't.
There are, as a developmentalist, I think about, this was mentioned, but making choices in our youth have an impact in the future. So, you know, we spend a lot of time teaching our kids how to eat healthy, how to exercise, how to think broadly about relationships and how to interact with people. And those are skills and abilities that carry with us throughout our lives.
Bev, one of the, I guess, measurements that in my personal experience, having watched my parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles grow older, is just the concept of remaining as independent as possible. How important is that in general? You know, there may be folks who don't care if they're taken care of by a nurse or a daughter at some point in their career or lives, but it seems to me that's one of the key measurements of aging well.
Yes, and you know, most people do want to remain at home for as long as they can, and we can either provide services in their home if they need chronic care, or you know, they can go to physical therapy somewhere else. But being able to stay at home and have a caregiver, we have 1.4 million people in Ohio that are providing care to an elder, and we have 2.5 million older adults in Ohio. So, and they're providing, you know, millions of hours of care. And it can be something as minor as picking up the groceries for someone to allow them to stay where they live. Or it could be driving them to church or going to church with them. Or one of the things that we really want to encourage people to do is to help with isolation of elders, and check on your neighbor, go visit people. You know, when we have weather problems, we always talk about check on your neighbor. Well, it's not just shovel the driveway, but have a conversation with them because they might be lonely. So helping with loneliness also helps prevent some of the chronic diseases that occur in aging.
We're talking aging issues today with Jim Bates, assistant professor at Ohio State University's College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences. Beverly Laubert is the interim director of the Ohio Department of Aging. So, Jim, we're, of course, going to have a show today that we think probably will be of some interest to people who are getting older or have family members that are getting older. But this is a societal issue. Why is that? Why should all of us, regardless of our personal specific circumstances, be thinking about these things?
There are a couple of reasons. And one is that the older adults in our lives are the connection to the past. And they link us with our history. And so from a real personal and historical context, they know what's happened in the past, and they can help us for the future. And really, those relationships that we form with them not only benefit us, but benefit them. You know, there's a study done a couple of years ago where they asked undergraduate students if they had interacted with their grandparents recently. And then there was a subset of undergraduate students who hadn't. And those who had living grandparents who interacted with them were much more likely to not be afraid of older adults and the issues and challenges of getting older. And so that kind of sets this tone for our lives, like that those young people are comfortable around older people and comfortable possibly helping them or reaching out to them and forming those relationships. So it's really this, and often our grandparents and great-grandparents are really the backbone of society. There's some other research that refers to them really as this watchdog of family culture, of, you know, societal culture, that they remember what it was like and that they can help us remember and kind of stay on track when it comes to our manners and being respectful, things like that.
That's right. They can help with family conflict. You know, we really want to, again, engage older adults and know that most people are living independently and can contribute. They can volunteer. They can spend time. We have 100,000 grandparents raising grandchildren in Ohio. For a variety of reasons. And that's only in the formal system that we know about. A lot of things happen organically that we don't have data on. So it's really important for children to have those connections. We recently had a campaign on falls prevention for Valentine's Day. Actually, it was Don't Fall for Me, Valentine. Mm-hmm. And we had some school children make Valentines for family members or other older people at nursing homes or what have you. And we had a curriculum along with it. So we talked to the students about what are the kinds of things that can prevent falls. When you visit grandma's house, take a look around the house. And what are some of the things that might cause grandma to fall that you can help with? So starting early with the young generation to educate them and, like you said, make those connections. I'm a Girl Scout volunteer, and I love it when the Girl Scouts go sing Christmas carols at assisted living or nursing homes, but I always tell them, go back. Mm. Go visit all the time. Don't just go sing carols. Actually engage and get to know an elder.
So besides the societal benefits of connecting younger people to older people and the need for that, as you point out, Jim, there's some practicalities to this, too, as a society. It's not cheap to take care of an elderly population, Bev.
That's right. And with the aging of our population, you know, just by math, we know that there are fewer people to provide care. So it's really important that we prevent those chronic diseases. Over 65% of people who are Medicare beneficiaries have two or three, at least two, and as they get older, more like three chronic diseases. And so if we can prevent those early, you know, I use the example of children and sunscreen. You know, our kids today are probably not going to have the number of skin cancer cases that we have in older adults now because we're always slathering them with sunscreen. We didn't do that when we were younger. And so we do have some ways and medical advances that can help somebody live longer. We just need to make sure that they're healthier while they're living longer.
And, of course, you mentioned Medicare recipients and such, and I would go back to the fact that it's you and Jim and me and Chip. We're paying for that. And so, Jim, there are, I don't want to sound too mercenary on this, but there are taxpayer consequences to all of this.
And I think Bev has the answer, and you know, we really focus on prevention. But when there are challenges and health issues that need to be addressed, you know, it really comes down to what we as a society value. Where do we place, with our money, you know, where do we place that emphasis? Is it with the aging, or is it with the young people? And I think we see that tension a lot play out in politics.
We've done a good job in Ohio of putting Medicaid money more toward home and community-based services where we can get more bang for the buck for the public dollar in keeping someone in their home and taking services to them rather than having them live in a nursing home or assisted living that are more costly.
Well, we will continue our conversation on some of the issues impacting Ohioans as a whole of an aging population, looking at some of the emotional aspects of it, the financial, and some of the practical aspects, including making sure your house will accommodate you in your older years. We'll be back to talk more with Bev Lobert and Jim Bates when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
My feet don't walk and my ears don't hear and my eyes don't see no more. My teeth have all fell on the ground and I've learned how to snore. Every time that I get up, I seem to fall back down. The golden years, I'm telling you, I wished I hadn't found.
Well, I guess sometimes we can have a little fun with the fact that we're all getting older, but it's not all fun and games. We're learning about some of the issues and challenges of growing old, and both from an individual standpoint and a societal standpoint. Helping us explore that are Jim Bates, assistant professor at the Ohio State University College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences, and Beverly Lobert, the interim director of the Ohio Department of Aging. Bev, maybe we'll start here. We've thrown out some very general issues, but in terms of the whole conversation on aging, what are the top two or three things that you would say that we probably need to think about as a society or as an individual?
I think a big thing is workforce, making sure that we have adequate professionals and paraprofessionals who are trained in elderhood and the aging process and conditions of older people, so that we can provide real person-centered care. But we also need to remember that older adults are really relevant in our society, and they have so much to offer. So we need to engage with older adults, help promote their independence, empower communities to make their make communities friendly for the aging population. And we really want to challenge ageism, too. Something that Jim mentioned earlier was engaging kids with older adults so they learn that an older adult isn't a scary thing. You know, they have a lot to offer, and they really do connect us to our history.
Jim, your thoughts?
First thing comes to mind is the long-term care. And thinking about the future, you know, 20 to 30 years before it happens. So sometime in middle adulthood, thinking about, you know, what will my future look like if I need to, if I need care as a 70 or 80 year old, and who will provide that care? How will I pay for that care? Is insurance in my future as well? And so, thinking about and kind of planning for those long-term care challenges.
I know one specific that we need to think about, it's a very practical piece of it, and that is, how do we adapt our home environment? Rosemarie Rossetti is an expert on designing for mobility. She joins us now by telephone and says three of the primary considerations should be safety, accessibility, and convenience.
We usually enter the home from a driveway and maybe a garage. And if we have a need to use mobility devices such as canes or walkers or wheelchairs or crutches, we need to realize that we can't always go up real steep slopes. So as we're looking at our property, making sure that the car does the climbing and that we have some level surfaces in which to get out of the car and get into the home. Oftentimes our garages are awfully narrow. So if we're remodeling or looking to move to something else, take into consideration the slope of that driveway and the passageway from the car into the home, as well as what is the entrance that you're going to be coming in from outside? Is it going to be through a garage or through a front door, through a back door, a side door? Is that door wide enough? We need at least a 36-inch door so that we can have the access for mobility devices. We also want no steps there for safety. And so possibly some type of ramping system needs to be included that's appropriate in its slope.
How about inside the house? What are some of the major things to think about in keeping ourselves safe?
The bathroom is probably the number one place that we're going to look at safety. And the grab bars are a must. We have to have reinforcement in those walls with some plywood and some blocking so that we have those grab bars in place by the toileting area, by the bathtubs, by the showers. As we're looking at bathtubs and showers, which one is safer? Is it safer to climb into a bathtub to take a shower? Is it safer to get into a bathtub to take a bath? Or can we create showers that are safer, that are curbless, that have no lips on them at all? And those are better in terms of the safety of the home, to create an open concept shower that has no lip and no encumbrance, so that we can just roll right in, walk right in.
Outside of the bathroom, anything you can do to avoid stairs seems to me like it would be important to try and accomplish, correct?
It's much easier to have a ranch style where all the first floor living is on level surfaces.
Avoiding stairs as much as possible, keeping the bathroom safe. Any other things that are high on the list, Rosemarie?
A real simple thing is taking away all of those little throw rugs. It's amazing how they can trip you up. So my recommendation is put those throw rugs out in the garage to get rid of them. It's a lot safer not to have those throw rugs in the house.
I know you have an extensive history in talking about these kind of things. You've got some books out, have a new book coming. If folks would like to explore this whole safety subject a little more closely, can they find you on the web somewhere, Rosemary?
Yes, I've got lots of articles and resources at my website. It's simply the initials UDLL.com, UDLL.com, which stands for the Universal Design Living Laboratory, the national demonstration home and garden that my husband designed, built, and lived in here in Columbus.
Rosemary Rossetti with us on Town Hall, Ohio. We'll be back to talk more about aging issues when we continue.
Opa Rocko's acting crazy. And with the right medication, we won't be lazy. And you know that you're over the hill when your mind makes a promise that your body can't fail. Do it. Old folks boogie, boogie we will.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. Our topic is aging, and hopefully aging well. Helping us tell that story, Beverly Lobert with the Ohio Department of Aging and Jim Bates from The Ohio State University. Bev, real quick, an overview of what the Ohio Department of Aging does.
Well, our mission is to deliver practical, person-centered strategies and services that strengthen and support Ohio's elders and their communities. And we do that through a variety of services and programs through area agencies on aging and some programs that we administer ourselves. We have some programs such as Matter of Balance, some classes that help people with mobility, with some of the prevention things that we've mentioned. Chronic disease self-management program. So if someone has diabetes, how to live with that. And how to be as independent as possible with those things. So a variety of things, long-term care screening. We have a long-term care ombudsman that advocates for people receiving long-term care services.
So we've had extension personnel in here helping us plan family budgets and helping farmers understand better how to keep nutrients out of Lake Erie. What's extension's role in the aging space, Jim?
My focus is to bring research and teaching curriculum and resources to the educators in the counties. And really that focus on intergenerational family relationships. We do have a focus on universal design, aging well, finances, and then also succession planning and thinking about the process of moving, the farm business to the next generation. Some of those intergenerational challenges as well.
So I want to bring up a piece of the aging pie that gets a lot of attention, rightfully so. It's something that I had some personal experience with. We've talked about keeping ourselves safe as we can in our homes, but one of the big challenges for many elderly is cognition. We know that Alzheimer's and various forms of dementia continue to be a problem. Where do you start that conversation, Bev, in terms of families and society recognizing that no matter how much we try, it can go wrong?
It can, and there are a lot of programs that we can help people with, especially caregivers, family caregivers, support groups. We work with the Alzheimer's associations, provide them with some funding to provide respite care for caregivers to help someone take a break and be so the elder can remain in their home as long as possible and keeping them safe. And then we're also working with the Ohio General Assembly to recommend standards for memory care units in nursing homes and assisted living facilities. So really wanting to increase excellence in those environments to make sure that we're really delivering person-centered care that is individualized, because everyone lives with dementia a different way. We had a great program called Music and Memory where we assisted people with developing playlists and giving them iPods to help them. Music really touches the part of the brain that ages last when someone has dementia, and it really can improve life for that person as well as for the caregiver.
Jim, anything in the extension arsenal there that deals with this?
You know, there is an effort to blend child care with adult daycare services. And at the Champion Avenue Intergenerational Center, there, you know, some of those older adults have some cognitive decline, but they have a chance each day to interact with young children. And these are preschool-age children.
I've been there. It's a great place.
It's a beautiful, beautiful facility, mm-hmm. and just a great program. Well-run and a lot of research opportunities going on there. But just this idea of blending the generations allows those older adults to get some interaction and stimulation.
I want to talk a little bit about the research that's going on right here in Ohio. We've been doing an inventory since I became director of all of the universities in Ohio, and what are they doing in the field of aging? And there is a lot going on. Cleveland State and Akron are working on cognition and mental well-being research. Kent State has a great grant to study brain health and functional outcomes after orthopedic surgery. And I visited the James at OSU recently and spoke with a doctor who's doing aging and cancer research that's just fascinating. And she's developed a longevity clinic there for people who are aging and have cancer. So there's so much going on. We have a wealth of knowledge and research happening in Ohio, and we really want to learn from that and apply those to some of our public policies.
Just got a few seconds before break. If folks want to learn more about some of the Ohio Department of Aging programs and such, Bev, where do they find you on the web? How do they reach out to you?
Well, our website is aging.ohio.gov, and that's probably the best place to start. They can start as a caregiver or a person who needs help and kind of go through our website and find what they need.
Got a handy extension website address to point them to, Jim?
We do. It's fcs.osu.edu. FCS stands for Family and Consumer Sciences.
We'll be back to talk more with Bev and Jim right after this.
Don't call me a dirty old man. I'm just a sexy senior citizen. No, 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 no. Don't you call me a dirty old man. I'm just a sexy senior citizen.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. Our topic is aging and how do we cope with it. Bev Lobert is the interim director of the Ohio Department of Aging. Jim Bates is an assistant professor at Ohio State University. So, Jim, one of the things that we need to drill down into just a little bit more is health care. You've made the very good point that preventive is the best solution, but it's not always going to be the solution. What do folks need to think about both in terms of accessing health care and then maybe helping to pay for it?
The first thing that comes to mind is to have an open dialogue with your physician and to know what is available in terms of health care. And then the next step is in terms of getting, let's say a prescription paid for or to get information about a prescription, to really develop a relationship with your pharmacist and to know the ins and outs of that medicine. In speaking with a colleague recently on campus, she explained that sometimes those pharmacists are so busy that they, even though they would like to take the time to explain as much as possible about a certain medication, they simply just can't take the time, or that people may not know to ask questions about it. And so having that dialogue really opens up those opportunities for further information and further care.
We have the Department of Aging. We work with pharmacies around the state for Medication Safety Week, and you can check our website to see when that is. But people can go to their pharmacy, and they'll do a drug review, and they'll look for things like, and talk to them, you know, this medication could actually cause some dizziness. Here are some things you can do to prevent falls, to really look holistically at the care that someone's getting. And planning ahead is really important. Doing some advanced care planning, talking to your family about what happens. Let's say someone is fearing dementia or they're physically declining, to talk to your family about what you want what needs you want to have met and how you want to have those needs met is really important. Through our area agencies on aging, we have what's called an Aging and Disability Resource Network. So someone can call their area agency on aging, and they can get screened for the kinds of help that they need, learn about services that are available to them, and what their options are.
And one misperception that we absolutely need to clarify today, you think of long-term care. And I think there's a lot of people that say, well, I'm 65, I'm going to qualify for Medicare, I'm not going to have to worry about paying for assisted living, nursing home care, or even and help at home. Unfortunately, Medicare doesn't do that.
That's correct. Only in very limited circumstances, if someone needs part-time skilled nursing care for a short time after maybe a hip fracture and they need some rehabilitation. So that's correct. But, you know, Medicare Advantage plans are becoming more popular now. So someone who is 65 or older can choose traditional Medicare or going into a Medicare Advantage plan. And when they have those Medicare Advantage plans, they should really look at what the value-added benefits are. There are things that the managed care plans will pay for that the traditional Medicare won't, and that's just sort of part of that package. So they might pay for a silver sneakers class to help someone with wellness. So people should really look at what their insurance covers.
Jim, I don't know if you have a teaching piece of your job. Are there young people, the ones that are going to take care of me in my old age, are there 18 to 22-year-olds at Ohio State University that are thinking about these things and want to help provide solutions for us older folks?
That's a great question, and yes, in my interactions with students, I've been able to do some independent research studies and independent research courses with certain students and really focus in on that aging and have interacted with a handful of these students. There is also an effort and this is an ongoing part of their curriculum, but part of the rotation is to include community outreach and instruction related to pharmacological issues, and then also nursing students getting a rotation working with older adults.
We will be back in just a few moments to wrap up our conversation on aging and aging well. Beverly Lauberts, Interim Director of the Ohio Department of Aging. Jim Bates is Assistant Professor at Ohio State University's College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences. We'll be back after this. We are talking aging issues with Bev Lauberts. She's with the Ohio Department of Aging, and Jim Bates is at Ohio State University in the College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences. Jim, with our farm community, we all know, maybe we don't know. Those of us in the industry know we have an aging population of farmers. Is Ohio State working in some areas that help farmers still do their job as much as they want to as they get older?
There's a real effort, initiated in the College of Ag that brings what's called agribility and mobility options to farmers. And that's something that we do an exhibit at Farm Science Review every year, and also some ag safety. But, you know, things like a lift to get into the tractor. You know, if that farmer has had an accident and can't climb that ladder into the tractor, into the combine, that there are lifts available for that kind of stuff. There are also, you know, ATV and pickup adaptations that help the farmer be mobile. And, you know, there are also some things within buildings and barns that can be addressed and made accessible for aging farmers.
So if you happen to be in that category, talk with your local extension office. They can be a very good starting point for you. A piece of this that we haven't talked a whole lot about is nutrition for our elderly. And I know there are programs at the Department of Aging that try to connect older folks with the more healthful foods that we can find them.
Absolutely. We need those farmers. So we have a program called Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program in 45 counties. And it basically gives elders a coupon that they can use at farmers market. So they're getting fresh fruits and vegetables directly from farmers. And if farmers want to participate, they can check with their area agencies on aging to see if what counties we have that program available in the state.
Jim, just a quick thought too on another piece of it. The simple fact of staying engaged, whether it's with the community as a volunteer or maybe taking a part-time job, kind of a chicken and the egg thing.
Yes.
It might be comfortable to just sit in the recliner and watch reruns all day because you don't feel like getting out, but I think the research says if you get out, you won't feel like sitting in the recliner all day.
That's a great point. And boy, it's almost like you read my recent published paper, because there's a connection between, and it hasn't come out in print, Joe, so you have it. But,
well, I have my sources.
But there really is a connection between mental health and well-being, feelings of you know, decreases in what are called depressive symptoms and increases in positive well-being, and being active in the community, whether it's volunteering, being active with your grandchildren, connecting with them, and just hanging out. If you're an older gentleman, hanging out with other older gentlemen. And if you're an older woman, hanging out with your friends and doing those kinds of things that men's groups do and that women's groups do. And I think we see that a lot.
So, Bev, we got about a minute and a half left here. Top one or two things folks should take away from the show and think about.
Prevention. Be as healthy as you can, as long as you can. Participate in some of the programs that are available. We have many volunteer opportunities that we can talk to people. There's a project I'll try very quickly called Give Back, Go Forward. We're doing with a few universities. If an older adult volunteers 100 hours, they get a 3-credit-hour tuition voucher from the participating universities. They can give that to a grandkid or a neighbor kid who needs help with their tuition. So there are lots of symbiotic sorts of relationships out there that people can engage in.
Jim, some final thoughts?
I'll put a plug in for an effort that we're trying to extend, and that is what I'm calling Grilling with My Grandchild. And it's an intergenerational program where we do some grilling with the grandparents and the grandchildren. They come as a pair, but they also take some time to create an electronic memory book so that they interview each other and they record that conversation so it lasts forever.
So I will tell you, I've come away from our hour today whole lot more confident that you guys are going to take care of me here before too long. I want to thank you both for joining us in the studio. Bev Laubert, the interim director of the Ohio Department of Aging. Dr. Jim Bates, assistant professor at the College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences at Ohio State. Thanks for joining us on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.